This is the Kilt Father, Mark Gunn, and you're listening to the Secret Fire Podcast.
Gandalf, my old friend, this will be a night to remember.
Broadcasting live from Crick Hollow in the Shire, Middle-earth, this is the Secret Fire Podcast, sent to burn at the heart of the world, episode number 7. I'm Michael.
I'm Brendan.
I'm Micah.
On this episode, Old Man Willow and Tom Bombadillo. How could Peter Jackson have left this out of the films? Or should he have? We invite you to come along, join the fellowship, become a servant of the Secret Fire each week here on the GCT Network.
Is your Great Commission transmission.
Oh boy, Brendan, I have been waiting anxiously to get to this chapter. What did you think?
I enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah, it's good. Yeah, top form.
There must be a willow tree in here. I'm feeling very sleepy.
Oh,
very groggy.
In the withy window. We have a lot.
Oh, it's a little withy window.
A lot going on. What did we talk about last time?
Well, last time we talked about chapter 5.
Yes.
On episode 6.
On episode 6. We talked about, what was the name of the chapter?
This conspiracy unmasked.
Conspiracy unmasked.
Yes, right. Yes.
And how all of Frodo's friends had anticipated this little adventure, and they were already willing to go the extra mile with him.
And that they are all eccentric.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. They aren't thinking about themselves or putting themselves at the center. Mm-hmm. And just some great, great storytelling and great lessons to be learned from these hobbits. See, and this is the wonderful thing about the book is, in fact, you read Tolkien's letters early in the process of writing. I mean, he started soon after The Hobbit was published. So he started in the late 1930s, and it didn't get published for well over a decade. Mm-hmm. Okay, he worked on it. But at the very beginning, he even commented on, you know, I could just write about hobbits all the time. And he enjoyed just watching them walk around, and just he liked to watch what hobbits do, and you can really you really get that sense. Obviously, these first handful of chapters he had written, and then, you know, there was some heavy revision going on before we came to the final form as we are used to. But I just, that tickles me that he would write to people and tell them, I could just, you know, watch these hobbits eat. You know, and to get to know them, that's something that we didn't have the chance to do in the films. Not to this degree.
No.
And did anybody have any afterthoughts or addendums, anything that you needed to correct from the last episode?
Not me.
Well, I'm going to. Okay. And I had said that, you know, talking about these hobbits from various locations in the Shire and even in the colony of the Shire, you know, Brandybuck Hall, Buckleberry, that they were all quite different, and those hobbits are suspicious of hobbits that aren't from their neighborhood, right? But this group coalesced and love each other and care for each other. And, you know, we were naming off, you know, Tookland and Buckleberry and the Hobbiton and, you know, things. And so I said, I didn't know where Fatty Bulger was from. So I looked it up.
Hey, there you go.
And now I do. Bulger is an old aristocratic family of hobbits of Fallowhide origin living in the Shire. Did you catch that?
Did you say Fallowhide?
I said Fallowhide origin.
Oh.
And they live principally at Budgeford. Is that in the game, Micah? Budgeford?
Yes, it is.
Okay. I got that information from The Complete Guide to Middle-earth by Robert Foster, and that can be found on page number 66. I'm showing that to the video for anybody that is tuned into our live video stream or watching after the fact on our Facebook page. I also discovered that Lo, Bilbo, and Frodo have a bit of Fallowhide in them as well. They're really a mix. Harfoot, Took. I mean, oh, I'm sorry.
Store.
No, there's no store that I know of yet. But Harfoot and Fallowhide. So you mix the fallow hide, which got into also the Took family. And no wonder Bilbo and Frodo have that adventurous streak. Mm-hmm. You know, what are the fallow hides known for?
Their adventurous streak?
Yeah, there's few of them, but mm-hmm. they're leaders. And they'll go and they'll just I don't want to say invade, but they'll just latch on to and make themselves part of a community of Harfoots.
Yep.
But then just kind of take over leadership.
That's right.
They're very charismatic, I guess.
Sure.
Not only adventurous, but had to be charismatic. You know, for those brothers, Marcho and Blanco, to get all those hobbits from Bree. Hey, let's go over the Bridge of Stonebows. Oh, that's another thing. I had an epiphany myself, but thankfully a listener had an epiphany as well, and they came up with the same idea as I did on the Stonebows Bridge, and we'll talk about that later on in our feedback segment. All right. You know, again, Brendan, I was so excited to get your reaction to the Old Forest. What did you think when you were reading along in this chapter?
Well, again, it was more listening along with Rob Ingalls's narration.
Yeah.
But even still, I just loved it. I love the visuality of it.
Yeah.
And especially the action now that they're getting deeper into the forest. Well, they've crossed the hedge. They've gotten deeper into the forest. And now the stakes are getting a little bit higher. Same thing with when the Ringwraith was chasing them. It wasn't all happy-go-lucky hobbit life.
Right.
They were actually getting into deeper and darker things. And it's just interesting to go on that journey with them.
So. It's a shame that this was left out of the films. Mm-hmm. Because this is a very otherworldly... I mean, you talk about... Toto, I don't think we're in the Shire anymore. Mm-mm. Oh, Frodo, I don't think we're in the Shire. We're in Kansas anymore.
The rains down in Africa.
It really is. You had already mentioned an episode or two ago that you had this sense that the foliage and the flora and the fauna mm-hmm. were sentient.
Yes.
Were you right?
Bubba, was I? Those trees moving everywhere.
What is it about that? I mean, let's think of some other examples where flora and fauna is sentient. You know,
In Middle Earth?
No.
Or just anywhere? Well, there's in the Wizarding world.
Yes.
Especially...
The Whomping Willow.
The Whomping Willow. Yes. Just a direct, I don't want to say correspondent, but a corresponding figure.
Yes. Oh, yes. That's a corollary.
Wait, the Whomping what now?
Willow.
Willow?
From Chamber of Secrets.
Yeah, the Whomping Willow.
I know, but...
That's not a forward. Okay, you know what the first thing that came to my mind was?
Gee.
The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, yeah, the trees.
Yes.
Yeah. That'll take my apples mean more to me than you.
Yeah. I don't know about you, but I particularly love fantasy that includes sentient, not only the animals, but the flora. Mm-hmm. I like when the plants are in on it and the trees.
Yeah.
But this is... To me, it's a whole nother level, what we experience, what we're going to experience here on this episode in the Old Forest. Mm-hmm. Should we just go ahead and hop into the text?
Sure.
Where did we leave off the last time?
Well, Frodo had just gone to sleep, but now he's in the middle of this dream or nightmare that's going on, this huge flash of light. He's climbing up a tower. There's this huge flash of light and then a sound of thunder. Not Ray Bradbury, but J.R.R. Tolkien. And
a delicate sound of thunder?
No.
And Pink Floyd?
Sorry. What? Who's Pink Floyd?
Which one?
Yeah, exactly.
Which one's Monty Python?
Exactly. And
dismount!
And then it just stops.
Yeah.
This chapter opens up with Frodo...
Well, he woke suddenly.
He woke suddenly. It was still dark in the room. Mary was standing there with a candle in one hand and banging on the door with the other.
There's our lightning, thunder and lightning.
Hey, there you go.
All right. What is it? Said Frodo, still shaken and bewildered. What is it? Cried Mary. It's time to get up. It is 4:30 and very foggy. Come on. Sam is already getting breakfast ready. Even Pippin is up. I'm just going to saddle the ponies and fetch the one that is to be the baggage carrier. Wake that sluggard fatty. At least he must get up and see us off.
There you go.
And soon after 6:00, the five hobbits were ready to start. know, and here's this description of the morning. So we're going out the front landing of Crick Hollow. Mike, is that where we are right now?
It is indeed.
And you can see Fatty Bulger. Is he yawning?
Well, I'm a bit further away from him. Oh, but okay. Yes, he looks a little sleepy, actually. Yeah,
the leaves of trees were glistening, and every twig was dripping. The grass was gray with cold dew. Everything was still, and faraway noises seemed near and clear. We've experienced that in the wee small hours of the morning, huh? Being outside, and noises are, they could be far away, but they seem like they're right there, and you know, mm-hmm. get a little bit jumpy, mm-hmm. and right? In their shed, they found the ponies, sturdy little beasts of the kind loved by hobbits. Not speedy, but good for a long day's work. So they take off. Oh, and here we go. Dismount. Oh, no. Get your coconuts. After riding for about an hour, slowly and without talking, they saw the hedge looming suddenly ahead. Wow.
It was tall and netted over with silver cobwebs.
How are you going to get through this? Asked Fredegar. Follow me, said Mary, and you will see. So it's an hour ride from the house in Crick Hollow to the high hay, high ho, high.
It's off to the forest we go.
Yes. A cutting had been made at some distance from the hedge and went sloping gently down into the ground. Now, Micah, I think that they did a great job in Lord of the Rings Online replicating this.
Yeah, it looks
this.
Really ominous.
It does. Yeah. It had walls of brick at the sides, which rose steadily until suddenly they arched over and formed a tunnel that dived deep under the hedge and came out in the hollow on the other side. And here, Fatty Bulger halted. Goodbye, Frodo.
All right, guys. This yep. is it.
I wish you were not going into the forest. I only hope you will not need rescuing before the day is out. Mm-hmm. Oh, is he a prophet?
Hey.
Or a soothsayer?
He may as well be.
If there are no worse things ahead than the old forest, I shall be lucky, said Frodo.
Oh, by the way, tell yeah. Gandalf to hurry up.
Yes.
If he comes by
all
first.
Along, we're in chapter 6. Uh-huh. And he's been waiting for Gandalf since chapter 2.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. So moving on, so getting back here to this passageway underneath the high hay, underneath the hedge. Mary got down and unlocked this gate that was down there, and when they had all passed through, he pushed it to again. It shut with a clang, and the lock clicked. The sound was ominous. And here we go. There, said Mary. You have left the Shire and are now outside and on the edge of the old forest.
Nice.
That was ominous.
Oh, man.
There's so much. I wish we'd just read every single word of this chapter.
What's stopping us? Oh, wait, don't answer that.
Yep. Are the stories about it true? Asked Pippin. I don't know what stories you mean, Mary answered.
I want to speak up at this part.
Please.
Because I love this part.
Okay.
Because I'm imagining Mary.
Listen to it.
That just really changed
very
the tone.
Very atmospheric.
Of the show. Mary, having grown up with these stories and having himself at once, and maybe even now, still being scared.
Yes.
Pippin, he's like, are all the stories about it true? And I think Mary, in this little block of text, he's giving out this little backstory.
Yeah.
And I think he's laying it on a little too thick for just a normal conversation. I think he's actually like trying to scare.
Do you think so?
I think so. That's how I'm reading it, just because he's trying to scare Pippin. He's like, oh, I don't know what stories you mean.
But the forest is queer. Everything in it is very much more alive, more aware of what is going on, so to speak, than things are in the Shire.
I've never seen it from that perspective, but I really like that. And I see Mary doing that.
Yeah, yeah. And this actually, if you want to get into a technical term.
Yes, I do.
Playwright Harold Pinter would call this a wall of sound.
Whoa, explain.
Okay. So here's what I mean. You've got this this device, which is a wall of sound, and for literature, it's this huge block of text.
It's a giant paragraph.
It's a monologue that Mary is using to try to affect some sort of response out of Pippin.
Okay.
While Mary is speaking, this gives your imagination like free range on imagining how Pippin is responding to every single word.
Or free rein. It's giving you enough rope to hang yourself.
Yeah. But I get the sense of Mary hanging on to every single word that... Or no,
Pippin, yes.
Yes, Pippin hanging on to every single word that Mary is saying. And Mary, if this were to be put on stage...
Oh!
If this were to be put on stage, because this is the lens through which I'm reading this.
Right.
I could see the actor playing Mary. You know, he's got that sense of quirkiness about him, but he's having to play both because he himself is also scared because he doesn't know what's going to happen.
Right.
He just knows what stories he heard growing up and what Fatty heard growing up.
Yes. Yes.
Pippin does not. So I don't know. If I'm in this situation, if I were Mary, I'd be trying to milk it for all it's worth.
One more reminder for our listeners out there. We'll do this until about episode number 10. Brendan is a theater arts major.
Yeah.
That's why he's on this show. And he sees, he reads things through the lenses of theater. How would this work in, mm-hmm. Practically speaking? And it's also his first time reading through The Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. And so it's just a discovery process. Every step of the way is a new discovery for Mr. Brendan Taylor, ladies and gentlemen. Gentlemen,
hey, where is he at?
And thank you very much for that. And I just love those technical terms and the things that you bring to the table. You know, Mary, in fact, he goes on, I've only once or twice been in here after dark and then only near the hedge. I thought all the trees were whispering to each other, passing news and plots along in an unintelligible language, and the branches swayed and groped without any wind. So you think he's embellishing? Do you think he's even actually experienced any of this stuff, or is he just reciting old wives' tales?
See, that's for the audience to decide.
Okay.
If I were an actor trying to play it, I would try to play both. You know, I don't give much stock into Stephen Sondheim as a practitioner, but he has this wonderful quip about, you know, why is it always either or, and why is it never both? With this is something where it is Mary saying, you know, I've been through this before myself. I've seen the trees sway without wind. I've heard those whispers. I myself have done that. But he's also trying to have a little fun. And what do you do when you're scared? You try to have a little fun to pass the time.
Yes.
A little levity to pass the time.
Yes.
To where you're not scared.
Little levity levities the whole lump.
That's not how that works.
No?
No.
No? Okay.
But I think it's comical because you've got Pippin. Pippin, he pops up at the beginning of this little exchange. Are the stories about it true?
Yeah.
And then Mary hits him with this wall of sound. And then I can just imagine this brief little silence after he gets to the trees and he explains about how the trees at one time try to take over the hedge.
Let's
go ahead and take that over.
In fact, long ago, these trees, attacked the hedge. They came and planted themselves right by it and leaned over it. But the hobbits came and cut down hundreds of trees and made a great bonfire in the forest and burned all the ground in a long strip east of the hedge. Mike, are you making your way to that glade?
Yes, I am.
After that, the trees gave up the attack, but they became very unfriendly. There's still a wide, bare space not far inside where the bonfire was made.
Okay, let me read that, what you just read. Except I'm going to try to read it as if Mary is seriously trying to scare.
Okay. Pippin. Here we go. A performance on the fly.
Hey. In fact, long ago, they attacked the hedge, and they came and planted themselves right by it and leaned over it. But the hobbits came and cut down hundreds of trees and made a great bonfire in the forest and burned all the ground in a long strip east of the hedge. And after that, the trees gave up the attack, but they became very unfriendly. There is still a wide bare space not far from inside where the bonfire was made. And then there's this brief little pause.
So, like, this is a Halloween moment.
It is. It's okay. A ghost story. It's a yes. Campfire story. It's a bonfire story.
Yay!
Do I get a point?
You get a point.
Yes.
For that.
Point. So, but there's this nice little brief pause in which Pippin recollects himself and regroups, and then he just asks, "Is it only the trees that are dangerous?" And then Mary goes back into another campfire story. There are various queer things living in the deep of the forest.
Yes.
It's another wall of sound.
Okay, yeah.
So
okay.
It's you see this scene fold out like these are two friends, yeah, but they're both scared. Yeah, but one is more experienced than the other, so the other one, it's almost like he's trying to ease him into it by being this light, jovial
Okay.
One might even say
but
immature.
It's definitely spooking out Pippin.
Yeah, oh yeah. And Mary's
we're going to see the results of that here in just a few moments. But, he says, not far from this tunnel there is, or was, for a long time, the beginning of of quite a broad path leading to the bonfire glade. And then, on more or less in our direction, east and a little north. That is the path I am going to try and find. Okay, so he's done with his wall of sound.
Yeah. Now he realizes, and I think that is the moment where he realizes, okay, I am here on a mission, not just to, scare the pants off of my friend Pippin here, but I am on a mission to try to find this path, which we have to remember is east and a little north.
Yes.
East and north
is where we're trying to go.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In fact, let's skip down, and this is insight into Mary and what you were saying about him. Mary alone seemed fairly cheerful.
Yeah.
You had better lead on and find that path, Frodo said to him. Don't let us lose one another or forget which way the hedge lies.
Why do you think it's important for them to remember where the hedge lies?
Several reasons. Well, at least two. One, so they can keep their bearings.
Yeah, okay, that's my main reason. Okay. Yeah,
and two,
point of reference.
If we need to bail,
let's double back.
Yes.
So we got to remember which way it is.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, those are the two reasons, the main reasons why you do that. For the moment, there was no whispering or movement among the branches, but they all got an uncomfortable feeling that they were being watched with disapproval. Deepening to dislike and even enmity.
I love this personification of the forest, of the trees. I love it.
What does that say to you?
It says to me that...
They hold a grudge.
And then these trees know that these guys are hobbits.
Yes.
They know what happened with the original bonfire.
Yeah.
They know that these pesky little hobbitses are somewhat responsible.
Yep.
Or at least they hold them responsible and accountable. For that event,
there was not yet, not as yet, any sign of a path, and the trees seemed constantly to bar their way. Pippin suddenly felt that he could not bear it any longer, and without warning, let out a shout. "Oi! Oi!" he cried. "I'm not going to do anything! Just let me pass through, will you?" Hey, desperate times call for desperate measures. The other halted, startled, right?
Mm-hmm.
"What? I should not shout if I were you," said Mary. "It does more harm than good."
"I should not shout if I were you."
Do you think that's actually what he's doing there?
I think he's serious.
Or is he now scared?
I think he's getting serious, yeah.
Frodo began to wonder if it were possible to find a way through and if he had been right to make the others come into this abominable wood. We're getting into a situation now where, let's just say that Mary primed the pump. Okay.
Yeah.
Got Pippin worked up into a lather, but it also it's had an effect on Frodo as well.
Yeah.
Not sure what Sam's thinking, but we know from history that Sam's eyes are on Frodo.
On Frodo. Yeah.
Okay. But where, Pippin doesn't know what to do, and now he feels
It's almost like a fight or flight situation for Pippin. And he just yells out, just let me pass through. I'm not going to do anything. What? So when Merry says, I wouldn't do that if I were you. I wouldn't shout it. It does more harm than good. What could that possibly mean? It does more harm than good. Could it mean that now the trees know?
They know sense blood.
They smell blood. Yeah, they sense fear. Yep. You're in trouble now.
And if anything, it could wake up the trees that aren't on their path.
Yes.
And get their collective conscience going. Yes. If it wasn't already. You know,
Merry is giving us some great advice for all of us. Let me take a little pit stop here. You took one pit stop. I'm going to do a little pit stop.
Okay.
I should not shout if I were you, said Merry. It does more harm than good. 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 21 through 23 out of the NASB. Mm-hmm. And I love my New American Standard Bible because it gives some great headings, which are not inspired, but they sure are helpful. Reading in segments and sections. This one is titled, Christ is Our Example. He says, for you have been, and remember, Peter is writing to the diaspora, the Jews that have been scattered. Is that the scattering that took place in chapter 8, beginning in verse 1, where Paul, or Saul, right after the martyring of Stephen, you know, talking about smelling blood, mm-hmm. sensing fear. Mm-hmm. Now Paul and all the Jews start this, or Saul, I should say, start this massive persecution of this sect.
Well, how would you respond if you had just been called a stiff-necked, uncircumcised heathen? You know,
and so that's who Peter is. He's either writing to them, either that's the diaspora that he's writing to, or he's writing to the diaspora from Assyria, the Assyrian captivity, which is many people, many scholars believe that that's who he is writing to, the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Either way, this segment is called Christ is Our Example. For you, Peter says, have been called for this purpose, since Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example for you to follow in his steps. Oh, we're back on paths again. Hey. We've been on paths since the very beginning.
Yeah.
Who committed no sin, nor was any deceit found in his mouth. And while being reviled, he did not revile in return. While suffering, he uttered no threats, but kept entrusting himself to him who judges righteously. I want to think about that. Being reviled. You know, that's a word we don't use that often in our modern vocabulary, but it is in most of the translations. Most of the modern translations still use the word revile. So I looked it up, because if you go to 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 11, I believe, is another passage where that word is being used, but it's being used in as revilers. Don't associate with revilers. Well, what are revilers? You know, all these things that we shouldn't associate ourselves with. Well, what are revilers? To revile is to reproach or actually vilify. From the word meaning abusive or a blackguard. Blackguard. That's an archaic word. We don't use that word anymore. But it means a person, particularly a man, who behaves in a dishonorable or contemptible way. A blackguard, a reviler. They abuse or disparage someone scurrilously. It's abusive speech, mm-hmm. abusive talk. And when Jesus was reviled, he didn't revile in return. He didn't react. He was non-reactionary, is basically where we're getting to. While suffering, he uttered no threats. He just kept entrusting himself to the one who judges righteously. What can we get from, how can we marry that to Pippin and Merry in this situation? Pippin feels like he's backed up against a wall, and he's being abused by these trees who are blocking the way, his path. And he wants to let them know, I don't mean you any harm. I'm not one of those hobbits that burned hundreds of trees long ago. I'm not one of them. Just let me through. Merry knows that's not going to work. In this situation, the best thing to do is zip it. Don't say a thing. And just trust. Trust Eru Iluvatar, right? I think that's a great little lesson that we can pick up real quick from Pippin and Merry so far.
I like that.
Up to now. So let's continue on. So Frodo's having these second thoughts again. Doubt.
I wish we were back at Creek Hollow. Creek Hollow.
Creek Hollow.
Creek Hollow.
Yeah. Hesitation. Reservations.
But
what does he do?
He still presses forward.
Keeps going.
Uh-huh.
So they find a place, you know, that they're able to get a view of things and well, so I'm wanting to move this along a little bit faster. Well, let's see. Let me back up here. A light grew clearer as they went forward. Suddenly, they came out of the trees and found themselves in a wide circular space. Their sky above them, blue and clear to their surprise, for down under the forest roof, they had not been able to see the rising morning and the lifting of the mist. Daybreak has happened. Without them knowing it, until they get to this clearing.
But now, let me ask you this. This isn't Bonfire Glade.
I don't believe so, no.
Not yet, okay. Just to move along a little faster, isn't it interesting that they keep stopping in these clearings that aren't Bonfire Glade, and they have to stop, and then someone will see another opening, another clearing, and say, oh, hey, we need to go that way. But it's not Bonfire Glade.
Yeah, exactly.
And they keep getting... It's almost like the forest is trying to purposefully distract them.
Well, exactly. Now stronger than ever, they felt again the ill will of the wood pressing in on them. Mm-hmm. What is the old forest doing? What are these trees doing to them, Micah?
They're toying with them, pretty much.
Yeah, and well, even more than that, they're manipulating.
And they're taking them off the path they originally meant to trod.
Yep.
No one says the word trod anymore.
I do.
Yeah.
Well, you're an old soul.
Yes.
And you're just old.
Frodo tried to sing a song to encourage them, but his voice sank to a murmur. What does he murmur? Oh, wanderers in the shadowed land, despair not, for though dark they stand, all woods there must end at last and see the open sun go past. The setting sun, the rising sun, the day's end or the day's begun. For east or west, all woods must fail. Fail. Even as he said the word, his voice faded into silence. The air seemed heavy and the making of words wearisome. These are all descriptions of somebody that is being oppressed. Right?
And then just behind them, a large branch fell from the old from an old overhanging tree with a crash into the path. The trees seemed to close in before them.
They do not like all that about ending and failing, said Merry. I should not sing any more at present. I think if Merry was doing what you alluded to, all of that is behind him now.
Yeah, it's gone now, yeah. I think it left out when Micah pointed it out earlier.
Yeah. A heavy weight was settling steadily on Frodo's heart, and he regretted now, with every step forward, that he had ever thought of challenging the menace of the trees. Wow. The dark trees drew aside, and ahead they could see the path going almost straight forward. Ah, they're being toyed with again.
Okay, sorry. Get back on a Harold Pinter kick.
Okay.
And if you're unfamiliar with Harold Pinter, Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright of the latter half of the 20th century, check him out. you actually have a couple of his plays on your bookshelf over here.
Well, imagine that.
Imagine that. But another thing that he was known for that made his plays so so charged with energy was his concept of menace. Oh. I think it's very interesting that...
That's a perfect word.
What you just read, a heavy weight was settling steadily on Frodo's heart, and he regretted now with every step forward that he had ever thought of challenging the menace of the trees.
Yeah.
To Pinter, menace was manipulative. Menace was controlling, trying to forcefully get someone to make a decision that you want them to make.
Yes.
Only to serve your own selfish desire.
That is exactly what's taking place here.
Yeah, and it's just that didn't strike me as well as the wall of sound did earlier, but now it kind of did. So hey, there you go.
See, now listen, before them, but some distance off, there stood a green hilltop, treeless, rising like a bald head out of the encircling wood.
Once again, the trees are showing them this little clearing.
Yeah.
This little bald head.
Well, the hobbits led their ponies up, winding round and round until they reached the top. There they stood and gazed about them. The air was gleaming and sunlit, but hazy. And they could not see to any great distance. Near at hand, the mist was now almost gone, though here and there it lay in hollows and or of the wood, and to the south of them, out of a deep fold cutting right across the forest, the fog still rose like steam or wisps of white smoke. "That," said Merry, pointing with his hand, "that is the line of the Withywindle. It comes down out of the downs and flows southwest through the midst of the forest to join the Brandywine below Haysend. We don't want to go that way."
Nope.
"The Withywindle Valley is said to be the queerest part of the whole wood, the center from which all the queerness comes, as it were." Micah, what do we know about the old forest?
Well, a long time ago, in the First Age, it was much bigger than it is now. But due to deforestation by the Numenoreans, it shrunk to the size that it is now.
Oh, okay.
And
I don't want the Numenoreans. I want the old Minorians.
Oh, hush.
Well, now they are old.
Yeah, pretty old.
Every Numenorean's old again. Oh, okay, go ahead.
And pretty much, it's on... What borders it is the Barrow Downs, as we know, and... We'll get into this later in two chapters ahead, but the Barrow Downs were a kingdom known as Cardolan, and that was...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was a Numenorean kingdom, and like I said, we'll talk about them later, but some of them, when Angmar attacked Arnor in TA 1409...
So, Third Age.
Yeah, some Dunedain of Cardolan fled into the forest and probably never came out again. And then that's all we know from the old forest before hobbits came and settled.
Okay. All righty. Yes. Now listen to this. This is out of the Complete Guide to Middle Earth by Robert Foster. This is a fun little book. So it's the forest between Buckland and the Barrow Downs, just as you said, a remnant of the great forest that once covered most of Eriador, which you said. The trees of the old forest, especially Old Man Willow... and others by the Withywindle were malevolent and mobile. In appearance, the trees were much like those of Fangorn Forest and may have been as old. Wow. So, strange things happened. These are strange trees. We don't want to go down by the Withywindle, but guess what is happening? The old forest, the trees, just keep steering them, herding them, in a manner of speaking. So here we are. At length, they made up their minds, I'm skipping far ahead, to go on again. The path that had brought them to the hill reappeared on the northward side, but they had not followed it far before they became aware that it was bending steadily to the right. Soon it began to descend rapidly, and they guessed that it must actually be heading towards the Withywindle Valley. Mm-hmm. Not at all the direction they wished to take. Oh, boy. So they're trying to go north east. Mm-hmm. But no matter what they do, they're going southeast.
Yeah.
And actually, if I may add this, in LOTRO, before, when it was first released, the developers had the paths actually changing constantly.
Oh.
And there was no map, so you couldn't look at the map to tell where you're going. But obviously, people didn't like lore-friendly stuff, and they complained, so they had
well,
to change
it. Well, I mean, if it can't get through it, wow. Whenever they got a glimpse of the sun in an open glade, they seemed unaccountably to have veered eastward, skipping down. Each time they climbed down in these ruts, the ruts, like, looked like giant wheels or wide moats or sunken roads, long disused and choked with brambles. These lay usually right across their line of march and could only be crossed by scrambling down and out again, which was troublesome and difficult with their ponies. Each time they climbed down, they found the hollow filled with thick bushes and matted undergrowth, which somehow would not yield to the left, but only gave way when they turned to the right. And they had to go some distance along the bottom before they could find a way up the further bank. They were forced to the right and downward. And they're going on. After another hour or two, we're still having problems, and we're being headed off. And we're simply following a course chosen for them, eastwards and southwards, into the heart of the forest, and not out of them, out of it.
I love that.
It was so steep and overhung that it proved impossible. This one fold that was deeper and wider than other, deep and wide. Deep, no, not that one.
There's a forest growing deep and wide.
Yes, it proved impossible to climb out of again, either forwards or backwards, without leaving their ponies and their baggage behind. Wow!
Mm-hmm.
So they were in a deep, dim-lit gully overarched by trees high above them. Here they come, stumbling along for long ways and more banks and cliffs and glimpses of other spots, and golden afternoon of late sunshine lay warm and drowsy upon the hidden land between. In the midst of it there wound lazily a dark river of brown water, bordered with ancient willows, arched over with willows, blocked with fallen willows, and flecked with thousands of faded willow leaves. The forest has won.
Yeah.
This was a battle that these hobbits were not prepared for, mm-hmm. and had no chance mm-hmm. of winning.
Mm-hmm. Well, now I have at least some notion of where we are, said Mary. We have come almost in the opposite direction to which we intended.
Yeah.
This is the river Windy Whittle.
Withywindle.
Withywindle. I will go on and explore.
Yep.
It's like, well, this is the point where I think you alluded to earlier. Toto, we're not in Kansas anymore.
That's right.
It's like, Frodo, okay, now I know.
Toto, we're not in the Shire anymore. Mm-hmm. Frodo, we're not in Kansas anymore.
So then, well, let me ask this. I guess this is like a sidebar. One might even say a tributary conversation of the Brandywine.
Of the Brandywine. Here we are on the Withywindle tributary.
So it says the Withywindle is this dark brown water. Is that the brown that makes the Brandywine?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Sorry.
Because we're south now, south of Buckland, where it feeds into the Brandywine.
Okay.
Yeah. There's just a lot of brown water in this area. It's slow moving.
Huh, what's with that?
And a lot of sediment. Mm-hmm. Or it's ale. We haven't been able to do.
And actually, did you say this? The Withywindle does flow directly out of
yeah.
the Brandywine.
Yeah, it's okay. a tributary.
And it flows out of it.
No, it flows into it.
It flows into it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well. But the Brandywine was brown before the Withywindle started flowing
yes.
into it. Okay.
Yes.
So there we go.
Yeah. Okay, and so they find a path. In fact,
a path that only opens up to them when they try to go right.
Yep.
It doesn't ever. It never opens up left and northward, but it only southward and right.
Well, Mary comes back. What's more, he said there seems to be a something like a footpath winding along on this side of the river. If we turn left and follow it, we shall be bound to come out on the east side of the forest eventually.
Eventually.
Yeah. But Pippin wants to know, you know, who made the track, do you suppose, and why? I'm sure it was not for our benefit. I'm getting very suspicious of this forest and everything in it. And I begin to believe all the stories about it. Well, there's no other way out that I can see or think of. So here we are. Oh boy, the hobbits begin to feel very hot. There were armies of flies of all kinds buzzing round their ears, and the afternoon sun was burning on their backs. At last, they came suddenly to a thin shade. Great gray branches reached across the path. Each step forward became more reluctant than the last. Sleepiness seemed to be creeping out of the ground and up their legs and falling softly out of the air upon their heads and eyes. Frodo felt his chin go down and his head nod. Just in front of him, Pippin fell forward onto his knees. Frodo halted. "It's no good," he heard Merry saying. "Can't go another step without rest. Must have nap.
Must have nap."
There now seemed hardly a sound in the air. The flies had stopped buzzing. Only a gentle noise on the edge of hearing, a soft fluttering as of a song half whispered, seemed to stir in the boughs above. Wow. Skipping down, Merry and Pippin dragged themselves forward and lay down with their backs to the willow trunk. Let's go down and what's Sam doing? Sam sat down and scratched his head and yawned like a cavern.
I love that description, by the way.
Yeah.
I love that description.
He was worried. The afternoon was getting late, and he thought this sudden sleepiness uncanny. "There's more behind this than sun and warm air," he muttered to himself. "I don't like this great big tree. I don't trust it."
He even says, "Hark at it, thinking about sleep now. This won't do at all."
Yeah.
But he's already so enchanted by the spell, if it is a spell, which I think later on it's alluded to as a spell.
Yes.
He's too far enchanted by it to do anything about it.
You know, Merry and Pippin had leaned against this tree. Yes. Frodo goes and he's sitting down on a root that's going out over the river
into the water, yeah,
into this water, so he can cool his feet and try and wake himself up. Right. So Sam pulls himself to his feet and staggers off to see what has become of the ponies. He found that two had wandered on a good way along the path, and he had just caught them and brought them back towards the others when he heard two noises, one loud and the other soft but very clear. One was the splash of something heavy falling into the water. The other was a noise like the snick of a lock when a door quietly closes fast.
There's your onomatopoeia right there.
Who?
Onomatopoeia.
Are you allowed to say that on the show?
I think so.
Oh, okay.
Oh, it is a family show, right?
Yes.
But the word snick, that's not an actual word. That's an invented word to describe the sound that the lock click makes.
Okay.
Onomatopoeia.
Good. Thank you. Thank you for that.
Hey.
He rushed back to the bank. You know, notice that everybody else is, like, unable to even move. They're so drowsy. Sam isn't going to let that stop him. Mm-hmm. He goes and fetches ponies that are trying to wander off. And now he hears these and he rushes back to the bank. Frodo was in the water close to the edge and had a great tree and a great tree root seemed to be over him and holding him down. But he was not struggling. Sam pulls him out. "Do you know, Sam," he said at length, "the beastly tree threw me in. I felt it. The big root just twisted round and tipped me in." "You're dreaming, I expect, Mr. Frodo," said Sam. "You shouldn't sit in such a place if you feel sleepy." "What about the others? I wonder what sort of dreams they're having."
About to find out.
They went around to the other side of the tree, and then Sam understood the click. Wow. Pippin had vanished. The crack by which he had laid himself had closed together so that not a chink could be seen. Merry was trapped. Another crack had closed about his waist. His legs lay outside, but the rest of him was inside a dark opening, the edges of which gripped like a pair of pincers. What a foul thing to happen, cried Frodo wildly. Why did we ever come into this dreadful forest? I wish we were all back at Crick Hollow. The leaves rustled and whispered, but with a sound now of faint and far-off laughter. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? We might try to hurt or frighten this tree to begin with, said Sam fiercely. If it don't let him go, I'll have it down if I have to gnaw it. Wow. So he quickly gathered dry grass and leaves and bits of bark and made a pile of broken twigs. Well, they light a fire. Right? They're trying to scorch this tree.
Mm-hmm.
A tremor ran through the whole willow. The leaves seemed to hiss above with a sound of pain and anger. A loud scream came from Merry, and from far inside the tree, they heard Pippin give a muffled yell.
Put it out! Put it out! Cried Merry. He'll squeeze me in two if you don't. He says so. Who? What? Shouted Frodo, rushing round to the other side of the tree. Put it out! Put it out! Begged Merry. The branches of the willow began to sway violently. There was a sound as of a wind rising and spreading outwards to the branches of all the other trees round about, as though they had dropped a stone into the quiet slumber of the river valley and set up ripples of anger that ran out over the whole forest. Sam kicked at the little fire and stamped off the sparks, but Frodo, without any clear idea of why he did so, or what he hoped for, ran along the path, crying, Help! 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 It seemed to him that he could hardly hear the sound of his own shrill voice. It was blown away from him by the willow wind and drowned in a clamor of leaves as soon as the words left his mouth. He felt desperate, lost, and witless.
He felt desperate, lost, and witless. I love that.
Suddenly he stopped. There was an answer, or so he thought, but it seemed to come from behind him, away down the path, further back in the forest. He turned round and listened, and soon there could be no doubt. Someone was singing a song. A deep, glad voice was singing carelessly and happily, but it was singing nonsense. Hey, doll, merry doll, ring-a-dong, dillo. Ring-a-dong, hop along. Fa-la-la-willow, Tom-bomb-jolly-tom, Tom-bombadillo. Half hopeful and half afraid of some new danger, Frodo and Sam now both stood still. Suddenly out of a long string of nonsense words, or so they seemed, the voice rose up loud and clear and burst into this song. Hey, come merry doll, dairy doll, my darling. Light goes the weather wind and the feather starling. You know, it goes on. Tom's going home again, water lilies bringing. Hey, come, dairy doll, can you hear me singing? Frodo and Sam stood as if enchanted. The wind puffed out. The leaves hung silently again in stiff branches. Something is happening.
Mm-hmm.
Appearing over the reeds, an old battered hat with a tall crown and a long blue feather stuck in the band. There's great yellow boots on his thick legs. He had a blue coat and a long brown beard. His eyes were blue and bright, and his face was red as a ripe apple, but creased into 100 wrinkles of laughter. Help! Cried Frodo and Sam, running toward him with their hands stretched out. Whoa, whoa, steady there, cried the old man, holding up one hand. And they stopped short as if they had been struck stiff. Do you know who I am? I'm Tom Bombadil. Tell me what's your trouble. Tom's in a hurry now. Don't you crush my lilies.
Yeah, don't crush my lilies.
Yes. My friends are caught in the willow tree, cried Frodo breathlessly. Master Merry's been being squeezed in a crack, cried Sam. What? Shouted Tom Bombadil, leaping up in the air. Old man Willow? Not worse than that, eh? That can soon be mended. I know the tune for him. Old gray willow man. I'll freeze his marrow cold if he don't behave himself. I'll sing his roots off. I'll sing a wind up and blow leaf and branch away. Old man Willow? Tom put his mouth to the crack and began singing into it in a low voice. They could not catch the words, but evidently Merry was aroused. His legs began to kick. Tom sprang away and, breaking off a hanging branch, smote the side of the willow with it. You let them out again, old man Willow, he said. What be you thinking of? You should not be waking. Eat earth, dig deep, drink water, go to sleep. Bombadil is talking. Who is this?
Who is this man?
Who is this, Brendan?
Bombadillo? Or, the, as the Spanish would say, Bombadillo.
Tom Bombadil. He burst out laughing. Well, my little fellows, said he, stooping so that he peered into their faces, you shall come home with me. The table is all laden with yellow cream, honeycomb, and white bread and butter. Goldberry is waiting. Time enough for questions round the supper table. You follow me. Follow after me as quick as you are able. With that, he picked up his lilies, and then, with a beckoning wave of his hand, he went hopping and dancing along the path eastward, still singing loudly and nonsensically. Mm-hmm. We'll talk more about Tom Bombadil on the next episode.
Sure.
Because we're going to go to his house. But here's what this whole chapter reminds me of. Frodo Baggins reminds me of David. King David. King David was a mighty man and was able to do many amazing things, but there were plenty of circumstances where he was unable to do anything, his human frailty preventing his own salvation. So what would he do? He would cry out to God for salvation. See, the hobbits this whole time are trying to make their way through the Old Forest, and the Old Forest is not having any of that. No, we're going to lead you right down to Old Man Willow.
Mm-hmm.
That's the last thing you guys want to come in contact with. You don't want to meet Old Man Willow, and that's the very thing that you are going to meet. In Jeremiah chapter 10, verse 23, out of the NRSVA, the New Revised Standard Version, I know, O Lord, that the way of human beings, or in this case hobbits, is not in their control. That mortals, as they walk, cannot direct their steps. That is, we've seen that in this chapter perfectly. That's what Jeremiah is talking about. The hobbits are displaying that. It's not in their control. None of this is in their control. They can't direct their own steps, not to where they want to go. But more about David. Let's go to Psalm 116, and I'm going to read verses 1 through 9 out of the NASB, the New American Standard Bible, and see if this reminds you of Frodo calling out, help, 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 and being responded to by this wonderful person of Tom Bombadil. Starting in verse 1. I love the Lord because he hears my voice and my supplications. Because he has inclined his ear to hear me. Therefore I shall call upon him as long as I live. The cords of death encompass me, and the terrors of Sheol came upon me. I found distress and sorrow. Then I called upon the name of the Lord. O Lord, I beseech you, save my life. Gracious is the Lord and righteous. Yes, our God is compassionate. The Lord preserves the simple. I was brought low and he saved me. Return to your rest, O my soul, for the Lord has dealt bountifully with you. For you have rescued my soul from death, my eyes from tears, my feet from stumbling. I shall walk before the Lord in the land of the living. We just saw that played out in this chapter. Frodo called out. Tom Bombadil answers. Tom Bombadil saves the lives of those hobbits. Mm-hmm. He's compassionate. He's preserving the simple. They're hobbits. He's going to now give them rest. Come, you're coming home with me. We've got yellow cream and honeycomb and white bread and butter.
A bruised reed he will not break.
Right. A flickering candle he'll not snuff out, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is what I saw in this chapter. Anything that you want to add to that?
No, you got it.
We are going to follow Tom Bombadil home. Next week is... The chapter's called In the House of Tom Bombadil. Is there rest to be found there? Does the analogy continue? Brendan, I can't wait!
There is a bomb in Bombadil.
You need say no more.
Hey, wait a
minute. You best get a move on.
Hey!
There are still goblins about.
Oh, bother. More mountains?
No, don't you see? The sun is setting in the west, behind the mountains. We're on the other side, to the edge of the land beyond.
So that ends our discussion on the chapter this week. It went longer than we had wanted this episode to go, but this was a packed chapter.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of strange things happening, huh? We did get some feedback last time, so aren't I supposed to have... yeah, I got it. Here we go.
Replies to the party invitations.
There!
Hey!
Replies to the party invitations!
Nice.
Mr. Douglas Underhill left a comment on our last episode, A Conspiracy Unmasked. That was episode number 6 of the Secret Fire podcast.
First, a response to a question. I think that the Bridge of Stonebows most likely draws its name from its architecture.
Yes! He gets a point for that.
Hey, there you go, Douglas.
I think that's absolutely correct. That's what it dawned on me. This past week. Wait a second, because I was looking at the bridge in the Lord of the Rings online. I said, "Hey, why didn't I think of that?"
Hey, but there you go.
Douglas Underhill did.
Any bridge built of stone spanning something larger than a small stream would be built of multiple arches.
Yes,
these would be the stone bows. And he included a link to a beautiful picture of a bridge from Switzerland with the comment, or in the comment. On the website as an example.
Yes.
Second, something to think about when looking at Hobbit society. The story of the old buck founding of Buckland, and later the mention of which farmers acknowledge the authority of Brandy Hall, brought it back to mind. It's interesting how much hobbits are similar to the Scandinavian and Germanic chieftains that Tolkien spent time studying.
We're gonna get learned.
Do we need to gather around children?
Yeah, gather around children. Douglas Underhill is gonna learn you something.
There you go. As number one, as they demonstrate their wealth and strengthen their community by throwing parties and giving gifts on their birthdays. And giving gifts on their birthdays. Germanic chieftains, along with the chieftains of traditional cultures all over the world, also demonstrated their power and built loyalty by hosting the biggest possible feasts and giving gifts to followers. Whereas in our culture, wealth is a measure of how much you accumulate. In other cultures, wealth is a measure of how much you give away. Germanic cultures seem to have been a mix of the two. Tolkien was, of course, steeped in the heroic literature of Germanic cultures, which are full of stories of chieftains whose positions and power were reinforced by hosting feasts and giving rich gifts.
Excellent point.
There you go.
Yes.
Point number two. Just like Germanic chieftains, Hobbit chieftains go forth, claim land, and build a huge house for themselves and their extended families. Later on, Other smaller families have a kind of fealty to them. Germanic chieftains would build the largest possible longhouse and have their extended family and servants live there with them, and would demand the loyalty of other local families in the region. Tolkien was a scholar very familiar with the Icelandic sagas, for example.
That was his forte.
There you go. And, of course, the chieftains of Iceland almost all came from Norway. They crossed the water, built longhouses, and smaller family farms organized themselves around them. The history of the founding of Buckland reminded me of that, and it might have been on Tolkien's mind, too.
Awesome.
Wonderful insight.
Yes, thank you so much, Mr. Douglas Underhill, ladies and gentlemen. We'll give you all the ways to contact us if you want to leave comments and feedback and educate us in such manners here in just a few moments. Anything fun? Tolkien related? Mike is trying to pilfer stuff out of my studio here.
Stealing all my Tolkien books.
Hey, and my walking stick. All that good stuff. You know what that reminds me of, Brendan? In Murfreesboro, Tennessee,
yeah.
The Green Dragon Inn.
Yes.
We need to go.
Hey,
and
I'm all
perhaps
for it, man.
Do a remote broadcast.
That would be so awesome.
Oh, wow. I haven't been there. I have a newspaper article about it and been meaning to go. Have you ever?
I have.
Oh.
I have a couple times.
Well, tell us about it real quick.
Well, unfortunately, I went during the afternoon, so there wasn't a lot going on.
Okay.
But they have a nice little menu. It's like English style pub food.
Okay.
So, you know,
pub fare,
you know, small servings of different cheeses and breads and stuff like that. It's quite cool. They've got the main area, which is like this room just full of tables.
Uh-huh.
There's this one huge table in the middle that's like a long table with bench seating.
Yes.
And it's meant for like the big parties.
Awesome.
And even if you're like a small party going in of like three or four, it's kind of implied that if there's another party already at that table of similar size, you can join with them and just meet and hang out. It doesn't have to be a planned thing. You just go to have a good time.
How was the decor?
Rustic.
Yeah.
Nice and old-timey. Right up your alley.
Are the busters dressed like hobbits?
Actually, yes.
They are?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not completely, but they have that old Englishy, old ye old townhouse feel to it.
Huh.
So it's cool in there. It's really cool.
I need to post a picture the newspaper clipping that I have. Maybe I'll put that on our Facebook page.
Pretty neat
about the Green Dragon Inn in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. See, you did have party tree stuff. That was fun.
Oh, hey, there you go.
Okay, what are we talking about next week? We already mentioned it one more time.
In the House of Tom Bombadil.
So, listeners, make sure you're caught up. You know, if this is your first time listening to the Secret Fire podcast, we just completed chapter 6. You can start from the beginning and catch up with us. Read a chapter a day and join us next time.
Yep.
Right on schedule. Isn't that nice? In the House of Tom Bombadil. I can't wait for that. Anyway, hey, the Secret Fire podcast is live each Saturday, Lord willing, at about, 1:30, 2:30 Eastern time on the GCT Network studio, or here in the GCT Network studio. You can join us for live video on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Secret Fire Podcast.
And you can join us on the Arkenstone server in Lord of the Rings Online at lotro.com.
To find out more about the Secret Fire podcast, as well as our other shows, including Finding Christ in Cinema and The Theonauts, visit our main website at gctnetwork.com.
If you want us to leave us a snail mail on the email, you can send it to secretfire@gctnetwork.com. Or if you want to leave us a voice line on the Hobbit Hotline, call us at 507-407-GCTN or the Emergency Backup Hobbit Hotline at 507-407-4286.
Like Gandalf always calls in and says this.
I am a servant of the Secret Fire.
Every week he does that.
Every week?
Yes.
It's like we named the show after.
Yes.
You can get at us on Twitter, at Secret Fire Cast, or if you just want to listen to the good old podcast.
Yes.
You can listen to us on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, or your favorite podcatcher, and search them all for The Secret Firecast.
And if you are subscribed in iTunes, if you'd take a moment and go over there and leave us a nice 5-star review, that'll help us get more visibility in the iTunes store so other Tolkien fans around the world can stumble across us, upon us, and join us on the adventure. Our theme song, Hobbit's Dance, is from the album Memories of Middle-Earth by Brobdingnagian Bards. Find out more about them and buy CDs and digital music and all that good stuff by visiting their website, thebards.net. And until next time...
I regret to announce this is the end. I'm going now. I bid you all a very fond farewell.
Bye!
Goodbye!
Adios, Tom Bombadillo.
It was tied to a willow.
It was... You know, I bet that the hobbits, if ever they got hungry and needed to feed the trees or themselves, you know what they would do?
No.
Feed them a nice big quiche.
You sullied the show.
I did not. What? That's an awesome joke. Michael, have you heard that joke?
No.
You want to?
Sure.
You are tuned in to the GCT Network.
Is your Great Commission transmission
at GCTnetwork.com.